It is Tuesday, January 4th. Happy New Year, Menace Nation. Episode 190. Man, I'm excited because the way the numbers are going, we're going to absolutely crush any year we've ever had. The morning show is a great addition. So if you haven't checked out the morning show, please tune in. It's a fun conversationalist style show with Chris Drew. I would encourage you to check it out. But today, I want to talk about the Rose Bowl, kind of Ohio State's unbelievable performance. CJ Stroud, Jaxon Smith-Njigba. I mean, just the young receiver showed up. Just an unbelievable performance, an unbelievable finish, comeback win out in Pasadena. What a great, great way to end the season, to build momentum into next season. So I want to talk about the Rose Bowl game a little bit, but I also want to take the opportunity to kind of review the season, kind of put it to bed, close the book on the 2021 Ohio State Buckeyes, with a team and season that would seem to be a disappointment based on standards in Columbus and standards in the Ohio State University walls, in the Woody Hayes Athletic Center, also in Buckeye Nation. Everyone expects more, no more so than Ryan Day. So I want to put it to bed. I want to talk about the Rose Bowl, though, because it was an unbelievable performance, a great game. I mean, awesome experience, just an awesome, entertaining experience. And I've said kind of for a month now, these non-CFP bowl games are exhibitions. They do matter. These players do want to win. If you watch that Ohio State team come back and win that game in the second half, they care. Ohio State cared, right? And players, competitive kids that go on the field and play the game of football, they all care. They all want to win. So I don't want to hear that it doesn't matter, that the players don't care. It matters. The players care. It's just a different matters. It's a different... The definition of what matters is different now in the college football playoff era. That game didn't matter for the national landscape. It didn't matter for goals, but it mattered for the 2022 season to see some development. Guys opting out now more so than ever at a place like Ohio State where most people don't opt out. I mean, that's been a rarity at Ohio State. They've also been in the playoffs several times, but definitely a different experience, but it was awesome to see those young kids. It's like an exhibition. It's like a vacation spring game where you get to really set the tone for the 2022 season and also send the seniors out the right way, the ones that played, right? That's what it was. And so I thought it was excellent. I thought it served a purpose. I thought it was exactly what Buckeye Nation and this football team needed to do. They needed to show some grit and resiliency. We know the defense wasn't very good. They weren't good all year. I told you all year they weren't very good, but people called me crazy and called me a hater and said, I'm just being honest. I don't know what else to tell you. I was being honest about the defense, and it all came to head towards the end of the year. I mean, the performance against Michigan, we're not going to rehash it, but the performance against Michigan, even the performance against Utah, they found a way to make some stops towards the end of the game. Good for them. That's great. It still was an awful defensive performance. So we all know a new sheriff is in town now. A new chief is in town on the defensive side of the ball in Jim Knowles. And we will find out if this defense can get revamped and we can have a Jeff Hafley type of turnaround in Columbus. I think there's also going to be some more staff changes that we're unaware of. You don't bring a guy in and pay him $2 million for him to coach with your staff from last year. Right, you just don't do it. Matt Barnes goes to Memphis as the DC. You do not keep that entire defensive staff intact. Larry Johnson, we know, is safe. Right, if he was going to retire, he would already announced it. He's certainly not getting fired. He's one of the best. Probably he's the best in the business up front. I don't want to hear anything about style of defense because those people that say that, oh, he's not going to want to play in the three down world. It's not three down. They play some three down. Ohio State plays some three down. I mean, it's more three down than Ohio State's used to, but they play a lot of four down. They just happen to stand a guy up. Big deal. Larry Johnson's done that. I've been a part of it when I watched him play a three down defense for, you know, a percentage of snaps on the year. So that is all nonsense. Larry Johnson's back. The real question now is Al Washington and Kerry Combs. That's the question. Will they be here in 2022? And if not, who is Jim Knowles going to bring in? That's the question we have, but we need to talk about this game first and really celebrate some performances by some unbelievable players that kind of gave you a glimpse. CJ Stroud gave you a glimpse as to who he's going to be in 2022. But before we get to the show, I got to get my gambling out of my system. Had a bad day yesterday. Well, I bet the Browns, so that was dumb. That was my fault. I shouldn't have bet the Browns. Baker Mayfield was awful. Kevin Stefanski was awful. The fact that he's rolling Baker out there, if he's hurt, he shouldn't be playing. If he's that bad, he shouldn't be playing. I don't know what else to tell you. And then they don't hand the ball to Nick Chubb against the worst rushing defense in the National Football League. So explain that to me. But yeah, that was my bet. My betting day yesterday, I bet the freaking Browns like an idiot fan. Really dumb. But I got a parlay for you with our partner, MyBookie. Right? Go to MyBookie right now, sign up, use promo code MENACE, and fire this two-leg parlay. Two-leg parlays are where it's at. And MyBookie has unbelievable options, great odds. I mean, they have all kinds of prop bets, anything you could want to do. I mean, I bet a prop bet yesterday on MyBookie, and it didn't hit, so I'm not even going to talk about it. But I want to tell you my bet. So go to my bookie, promo code MENACE. I'm riding my Cleveland Cavaliers at home to win. They're a 3-point favorite. I think they pull out the victory at home. And then I'm riding a former Blue Jacket, Sergei Bobrovsky, and the Florida Panthers at home against the Calgary Flames. You should be able to get that for well more than even money. So fire it with me on my bookie, promo code MENACE, the Cleveland Cavs and the Florida Panthers of the NHL. And let's ride. Let's win some money. So that's what we got going with gambling. So fire it with me with my bookie. If you need handicapping advice, we had a rough day yesterday, but an unbelievable month last month. So Menace to Picks has been up and down. We've had great months. We've had okay months. And then we've had probably three bad months in the whatever. I think it's been 15 months we've had the service. But last month, I mean, it doubled any month we've ever had. We won 733 units. And what a unit is, it's like a percentage of your bankroll. So if they say bet 10 units, that could be $10 to you. That could be $100. They're just trying to help you bet your bankroll. But 733 units in December. That means if you bet $10 per unit, fired a couple hundred bucks a day, $10 per unit, you made $7,330 just in December. I don't care how cold we go, if we do go cold, which we're not going to, but if we did, you're not going to lose $7,330. So you'd be up crazy. If you haven't checked it out, check out Menace to Picks on Twitter or Instagram, or just fire. Go to patreon.com/MenaceToPicks for $25 a month. I mean, you could pay $25 and just check it out. Go on there I'm telling you, sports gambling has changed my perspective on sports, because you bet things and then you're so invested. We also have the big board squares. If you want to get invested in the national championship game and you're not right now because you're a Buckeye, we're raising money for the Zone 6 Fund. You can go to Venmo at Cameron Media, send $100, you get a square. If you hit the final score of the national championship game, you win $3,000. If you hit halftime, you win $1,000. $500 first quarter, $500 third quarter. So come play with us, man. We're raising money for a great cause. I think I mentioned it on the morning show. I've certainly mentioned it on on the main show, but we've raised around $70,000 for the Zone 6 Fund already, and that's in the bank. We haven't spent a penny of it yet. Braxton Miller Foundation, we donated $5,000. We donated $5,000 to youth sports around Columbus. We donated $1,500 to the Franklin County Sheriff's deputies and to sponsor a softball team for the deputies. And then we donated $500 to a couple different unique cancer situations. So we're donating money. We're trying to make an impact. Biggest impact we're trying to make is in youth sports. We'll have $75,000 spent on youth sports this year, minimally. So we raised $82,000 in 2020. Our goal for 2022 is to raise $150,000. All given back to the community. We got some huge news coming this summer for some partnerships and some people that are going to help us raise money. Some former players that were on the team this year and are going to be first rounders. So really excited about it. If you want to check that out, Venmo Cameron Media or email me Zach@Menace2Sports. There's a lot of stuff to get through, but we're trying to do a lot of things with this platform. I don't want to waste your time, but we're trying to obviously bring in ad revenue to help fund the growth of this platform, and then also trying to raise money for charity. So come hang out with us. Come bet with us. Come raise money with us. It's a vibe, man. The 2022 vibe. Menace to Sports kicking it off right. Enough about that, though. Let's get to the show.
What a hit. Denzel Ward. You got barbecue back there, and you didn't invite me. Hurt my feelings.
You'll be pleased to know this is the last time I'm hosting. I don't care anymore. I'm joking. I never did.
Braxton Miller's loose spin move.
You're in no position to lecture the public about anything. You know nothing about the real world.
He'll run it after the 10, 15, 20, 25-30, 35-40, 45-50, 45. There goes Davis.
Oh, my God.
Davis is going to run it all the way back. Auburn's going to win the football game.
Lucky for me, the press can barely speak English.
But they are who we thought they were.
Well, he has trouble with the snap. And the ball is free. It's picked up by Michigan State. Jalen Watts Jackson. And he scores on the last play of the game. Unbelievable.
Well, then get the fuck out of here then. Okay, see ya.
All right, the 2022 Rose Bowl champions. I hate that they do that. Why is it the 2022 Rose Bowl champs when there was the 2021 season? I know they played it on January 1st, but that's just stupid. That's my opinion. Like, I always tell people we're the 2014 national champs, because we were. That was the season that we won it all. But all over the place, I have 2015 national champ stuff. It's like, why? Because we won it in 2015? The season was played in 2014. Stupid. But anyways, I want to break this game down, and I want to do it two ways. One, a bunch of my analytical models have been down the past 2 days, so I couldn't pull the normal analytics, which is fine because I have some season analytics that will fit the bill. But instead of going play-by-play like I did for the Michigan game, I'm going to kind of go drive-by-drive and break it down by side of the ball. I just want to talk about kind of the impactful drives and what happened on each side of the ball. Because as you, there's two ways to look at a game, right? And both are equally vitally important. One is you look at a game ebb and flow, right? How did the game flow? How did it go? Offense complementing defense, defense complementing offense. And then the second way to look at it, which is sometimes as important or more important, is how did each side of the ball play? Right? You play a series, you come off the field, you get coached up, you rest, you get back on the field, play another series. And although there is a lot of reliance on the other side of the ball, there's a lot of learning and teaching and coaching that goes on in between drives that make a side of the ball improve or not get adjusted. We saw it against Oregon, right? The cut split against press man that never got adjusted in between series and at halftime so they could just crack linebackers, take two, and waltz in the end zone, not trying to bring up bad memories. But I want to start with the offensive side of the ball. I mean, just unbelievable day for C.J. Stroud, for Jackson Smith and Jigba. I mean, he burst onto the scene. I talked about it. I talked about it on the preview show, and I hope you listened. But he was going to have an unbelievable opportunity. One, because Utah was not good at covering in the slot. They just weren't. I mean, on film, analytically, they weren't. And on top of that, we were going to see what Jackson Smith and Jigba would be like as wide receiver one, to the tune of 15 catches, 347 yards, three touchdowns, and a 23.1 yard average. And those were not all deep balls. Unbelievable run after the catch. He is not a burner, top end speed, but he is sudden. His acceleration is great. I've said it 100 times over. He is a more athletic, faster KJ Hill. That's what he is. And KJ Hill was the all-time whatever, broke records at Ohio State. Great player. Still in the NFL. Jackson Smith and Jigba is an improved version of KJ Hill. Just ridiculous. And then Marvin Harrison Jr. coming out, the freshman. How cool was that? It's Marvin Harrison's kid. One of the best receivers in NFL history. He doesn't get enough credit. Six catches, 71 yards, and three touchdowns. Burst onto the scene. And then Emeka Egbuka, who I think is one of the most talented young receivers on this roster, has 15 yards to catch, three catches, 46 yards. Julian Fleming played okay, not great, and we'll get to the interception in a minute, but he played okay. I think he's got a lot of work to do. But C.J. Stroud, I don't think he had a bad throw all night, and we'll talk about the interception later, but I didn't see him make a bad throw. 37 completions, 46 attempts, almost 600 yards passing, six touchdowns, and an interception that wasn't his fault. Start there. Just unbelievable game by CJ. But let's get to it. So Ohio State came out, kind of struggled on the first two drives, stalled out, couldn't get anything going. Then on the third drive, they started to come open. First of all, CJ Stroud's throw to Emeka Egbuka on second and 10 was unreal. One of the best throws I've ever seen. See, the thing is, it was a go route. So on any of those vertical routes, right, for an outside receiver, they're being coached to, obviously, they're trying to stack the defender. That's their goal. Get behind the defender, score a touchdown. Obviously, that's very simple, very general knowledge. That's what they're trying to do. But if they do not, or even if they do, they need to do what's called save the box, right? And there is a box at Ohio State in the practice field. We used to paint a red line. It was about 6 yards, 7 yards from the sideline. You paint a red line, 5 to 7, I can't remember. Might have been five. Yeah, 5 yards from the sideline. You paint a red line. The receiver's never to go outside that red line unless the ball takes him there, right? That is saving room on the sideline for the quarterback to drop the ball over your outside shoulder where the defender can't cover it, right? No defender, rarely, if you're that wide, is going to be outside leverage on you, is going to be outside that box. Never. They'll be inside and make you drop it in the box. It's a harder throw. So you have to save the box. There were several times in this game where those young receivers, obviously, they don't have that down yet, right? Emeka Egbuga ran a go route from a condensed split, gets washed outside. He ends up, honestly, I think like 8 inches from the sideline. That was the box CJ Stroud had to throw it to. An 8-inch box, 40 yards down the field. Do you know how hard that is? I mean, there's NFL guys that miss that throw. A lot of them. He dropped that sumbitch right in that box. That throw was insane. Insane. And then the very next play, he throws another absolute dime to Marvin Harrison Jr. for 6 on an inside fade. So there's a difference, right? You run a fade from the inside, you're going to get width. You still have to save the box, but there's way more room out there to drop it. And he dropped it right into the arms of Marvin Harrison Jr. for 6 points. Then on the very next drive, Ohio State's down 21-7 at this point. They take the field again. Stroud hits Jackson Smith and Njigba again with another dime for 6. I mean, he was just dropping them. That was one of the more unbelievable throwing performances I've seen. Those two, Jackson Smith and Njigba and CJ Stroud, played out of their minds. Then they go kick it off and a kickoff return for a touchdown, which we'll talk about in a minute. But it was just that kid right there. Wow. He is a dynamic little white kid. But then what happens? Next drive, offense takes the field. CJ Stroud and Jackson Smith and Njigba answer again. He fires a dig in there in cover two. Jackson has an amazing post-catch awareness, right? It is a split safety. Jackson gets behind the linebackers, that the underneath coverage. CJ throws it in a window, kind of over a window, honestly. And then he catches the ball. And right the minute he did, he knew what the top of the coverage looked like. And as a receiver, you need to know that. Is it a one high? Is it a two high? Where are those defenders? So after the catch, you can make magic happen. And what did he do? He caught that ball, zero hesitation. He knew exactly where to go. He knew he had Julian Fleming on a deeper route on the left side. So he took off to chase Julian. Julian picks up a block on a safety. Just a great play. I mean, Julian had a great block on the deep safety. Springs in for a touchdown. Just a phenomenal awareness play. Well-coached play. Kudos to Brian Hartline, because those kids have great spatial awareness and defensive awareness. The young kids still need to come along, but that's common, right? But Jackson Smith and Njigba, my God. So they score an answer, right? And it's 28-14. Then, of course, Utah goes down and scores. We'll talk about the defense in a minute. 35-21. And then the very next drive, C.J. Stroud hits Jackson Smith and Njigba in the seam versus cover three. The corner bit on a curl and was a step late to get there. The biggest thing that happens in bowl prep is you lose basic core fundamentals, and he lost it here. And to be honest, they've lost it all year. The receivers need better ball security. I know Brian Hartline is self-evaluating after the year, and he's going to say that, because they do not carry the ball high and tight. They do not tuck it away, and he didn't. He had the ball loose. He's breaking away for a touchdown, and the corner made a great play. Punched the ball out, touchback, Utah ball. I mean, that's what happens in bowl games. So that's the first half, obviously down. You know, wasn't a bad half of offensive football by any means, but it was a bad half defensively. So they come out the second half. First drive, you talk about creativity by Ryan Day. Badass creativity. He lines Jackson Smith and Njigba in the backfield at tailback and runs a stick seam. Like, Jackson starts to get width, sticks, and gets up the seam, and he hits him in stride. Huge play to open the half. Unbelievable. And that drive ends with an interception to Julian Fleming. All right. The receiver, and I already talked about it, the receivers were giving Stroud nowhere to throw the ball, right? Except for Jackson Smith and Njigba, because he has that experience. But Julian Fleming looked unathletic on what should have been a PBU for him. And the question I always ask my guys when they're that wide is, where do you want him to throw it? You left him no box to throw it. Where did you think he was going to throw it? For you not to anticipate an inside throw, you're nuts. And if you go back all the way to Chris Olave's freshman year against Michigan, he kind of did that, right? It's a common freshman mistake. You just fade away outside, trying to run away from him, and you find yourself on the sideline. So Chris Olave found himself on the sideline, and Justin Fields threw a good ball. It was just way inside, and Olave cut the DB off, caught the ball inside, and scored a touchdown. That's what you have to do. If you get yourself out there, you better understand that ball is going to get thrown inside. It has to, right? Now, the hard part of this is of that play, if you go back and watch it, is the corner played hard outside leverage. And honestly, it was a double move. It probably should have just been a no throw for CJ Stroud. That's where I think his blame lies. It's a double move with hard outside leverage. It's going to be tough for you to win there. You either need to no throw it or give the receiver the freedom to go inside. Because if you force an outside release against a hard outside leverage defender, think about this. I don't want to talk too football analysis on you. But if a guy's way outside of you and you're being coached, you have to go outside, you're going to have no option but to get washed to the sideline, right? Because you're fighting to go outside. That guy's trying to stay outside. So at some point, you either have to let the receiver go inside and stack him back outside, or it needs to be a no throw. You need to see leverage, see bail, and say, no, I'm not throwing it. Because the other side of this that Ryan Day would tell you is it is impossible on the quarterback to anticipate a receiver going inside and getting back out. It just is. So that happens. It's an interception. Ohio State's defense comes out and stops them. And then the punter bobbled the punt. I mean, eyes on the ball, no idea how. So Ohio State gets the ball back on the 11-yard line. It's 35-21 Utah. I will say this, side note, watching this game, and I know they were young guys, but it's not just them. I watched some of the older guys do it too. The receivers' blocking fundamentals are poor. I mean, they're poor fundamentally. They just are. You watch them block. The minute they go to block, they reach wide and grab the outside shoulder pads, right? We used to coach the difference. It's not being coached anymore. The difference is hand placement. You want your hands inside, thumbs up, elbows together, and punch a breastplate. That's what you want, right? That way you don't get holding penalties. You're powerful. You control the block. Well, I mean, there was holding penalties in this game. It's poor. It's got to get fixed, and I'm hoping that Brian Hartline gets that done, and really as a program. I mean, I think everyone needs to perimeter block and work on that skill because it's a really hard skill, and our receivers are pretty average at it. That's about the only knock I can have on this receiver group or this offense. But then we get on the 11-yard line. They run a simple dig over concept, right? You think about it. Jaxon Smith-Njigba's in the slot. Marvin Harrison Jr.'s outside to the left. And it's real simple. Jaxon Smith-Njigba runs a little like dig over route, right? And that squeezes the defense in, creating a window outside of him, right? And then Marvin Harrison Jr. does a great job out on his stem of widening the DB, kind of heading towards the back pylon, widening him, and then snapping off a little post dig and wide ass open. I mean, it was easy completion. Marvin Harrison Jr. looked like a vet the way he ran the route. Wide ass open, great route, great job by Brian Hartline getting that coached up and that kid at executing it. I mean, just phenomenal. Easy touchdown. Then we're in the fourth corner, down 7. And then how about my guy Mitch Rossi on the boot gets a huge play, rumbling, stumbling down the sideline, gets him down close. And then, I mean, the fade to Marvin Harrison Jr. is like stealing. I mean, it wasn't a great throw. It was amazing patience and an amazing release by Marvin Harrison Jr. I'm telling you, I know Jaxon Smith-Njigba stole the show, but make no mistake about it. This kid, Marvin Harrison Jr., had an unbelievable coming out party. I know he had 3 touchdowns. I'm not talking about stat lines. I'm talking about some of the things, like I just mentioned, that red zone route where he widened the corner and snapped it off wide open. The fade route, if you watch him come off the ball with patience, uses a hard inside release, gets the DB to freeze, gets outside, and makes a great catch. It wasn't a great throw, right? You'd like that throw to be higher and outside more. That could have been broken up if it wasn't such a great route. But what it was great late hands by Marvin. I mean, he didn't show hands early, letting that DB get his hand in between his hands. He showed late hands, caught the ball. He showed veteran shit, almost as if he was raised by a guy that was a Hall of Fame receiver. But great to see. He's going to be special. And then the next drive, good Lord, that unreal catch by Jaxon Smith-Njigba to go up 7. I mean, just a great play. He did what's called wind it, right? That quarterback drops it in the box over your outside shoulder. Probably would like it to be a little further out, but that ball was even with his shoulder on his outside. You imagine looking up and tracking a ball moving full speed over that outside shoulder? Unbelievable. I mean, it's great play. It reminded me of Devin Smith's catch against 2014 Michigan State on third down. Just an unreal play. Unreal play. Then Utah answers right away, and it's the drive to win the game. It all started with a monster kickoff return by Emeka Egbuka to the 45. And honestly, I want to shout out to Parker Fleming, because a lot of people I've seen, people have asked me, like, well, he could demote Parker. The special teams have been excellent this year. from the field goal team to the punt team to the kickoff return team. The kickoff team has struggled mainly because we don't have Ohio State didn't have a kicker that could kick it in the end zone. Don't ask me why. I mean, it's Ohio State. You have to. But special teams is outstanding and a huge piece to why they won this game. You start with the ball on the 45-yard line and only need a field goal to win it. That's a good day to be an offensive coordinator now. Great kickoff return. Emeka Egbuka flashed and showed that he's going to be a great player. Probably the most impactful play of the game that no one's going to talk about. And then the fitting end of the game. Noah Ruggles, tug on my balls, hits the game winner and waves to the defender. Just outstanding offensive performance. I mean, you couldn't have asked for a better offensive performance from this team. I mean, you can nitpick a couple things here and there, but almost 700 yards of offense against a good defense now, a really good defense. Now, Ohio State struggled running the ball a little bit, mostly. I mean, they averaged 5.5 yards a carry, right? They had over 110 yards rushing. They just decided that they were going to throw it to win it. They were down. They kind of had to, and they did it, and they did it really, really well. You flip over to the other side of the ball, let me just start with saying this. Everyone is championing Tommy Eichenberg. 17 tackles, led the team, just finally had a coming out party. I'm telling you, he did not play well. All you need to do is watch the second play of the game. He's the ball hits in his gap, and he's too slow to trigger, too slow of an athlete, and doesn't, maybe not athletic enough, he can't get in fit his gap at the line of scrimmage. It doesn't mean you played a great game because you tackle the guy 9 yards downfield. It doesn't mean you're a good player either. And he's young. I'm not saying he's not going to be. But just because he had 17 tackles, that doesn't mean he's a great player. But the first drive, they hit a touchdown. The Ohio State's defense dialed up a zone blitz. Zach Harrison's the middle dropper, and Covey scores. You talk about an explosive-ass little white kid. That kid is impressive as shit. Britton Covey from Provo, Utah. He was Mr. Football in Utah. Side note, he played for Kyle Whittingham's brother, Kerry, in high school. So Kyle Whittingham's the head coach at Utah, played for his brother in high school. This is a wild matchup. I didn't think about this. Kyle Whittingham and Ryan Day, both Urban Meyer assistants, playing each other. But how about this? I don't know if you knew this. I don't know if they talked about it on the broadcast because I don't listen to them. But Brian Covey's grandfather is Stephen Covey. Covey, whatever. He's the author of Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. And if you haven't read it, I've read it. It's awesome. It is unbelievable. And the Pilot Boys podcast, my guy Partha even mentioned it. One of the seven habits of highly effective people are have the end in sight, right? And my God, did that kid have the end in sight on that kickoff return and this touchdown. So complete baller, just a stud. I mean, reminds you of those Hunter Renfros and all those little slot, quick twitch white kids that play receiver. Then the second drive touchdown, it's the guy that I think played the worst on defense is Ronnie Hickman. Huge play as he gets absolutely scorched on a slant. I know he thinks he has Bryson Shaw inside to help him. Bryson Shaw is late and misses the tackle. Then the next play, they throw a wheel route for a touchdown on Tommy Eichenberg, who is basically Tough Borland 2.0. He just is. The third touchdown drive, they come out. Denzel Burke got beat on a big play in man coverage. And then on the touchdown run, I don't know what's going on. I feel like a broken record. I don't know what's going on with the linebackers. On the touchdown run, it's like they don't see pullers. Taraja Mitchell and Steel Chambers just downhill run into the line of scrimmage and get blocked when they need to exchange their gaps with pullers. So listen to this. Let me explain something to you. When the offensive line lines up in this style of defense, every player has a gap, right? Between the center, the guy that snaps it, and the guy next to him, the guard, that is called the A-gap, right? Someone is responsible for the A-gap. So if the ball goes through that gap between those two human beings, one of the defenders needs to be there to make the tackle, right? If you just run zone plays like Ohio State does, it's fairly easy to fit your gap. It doesn't mean you're going to make the tackle. It doesn't mean you're not going to get blocked, but it's fairly easy to fit your gap because it doesn't change, right? But what happens is when that center is there and that guard's there, if I pull a tight end to the left, let's say, or a guard to the left, what did I do to the left? I added a gap, right? Because I brought another human being over. Now, instead of having one gap, I put a human in there, and that created two gaps, one on each side of them, right? So those linebackers, the defensive line can't account for that. I mean, they can, but I don't want to get too high level. That linebacker now needs to bump out to the next open gap, right? They need to slide with the puller and fit their new gaps. The puller created new gaps. We don't teach that or know that or something. because they had two pullers and we just ran forward. Taraja Mitchell and Steel Chambers just ran forward like they were running their face through a concrete wall, and there was no one in the outside gaps. So the ball slid and it hit a touchdown. I don't understand it. It is basic. I'm telling you, I taught my son sixth grade defense this. It is not that difficult. You got to fit your gap. When they add offensive players, there's more gaps. You got to adjust for pullers. But conversation for another day. Jim Knowles will get it fixed, right? Then they come out and have a kickoff return for a touchdown. Just talk about a dynamic player. There was missed tackles galore all over the field. First foremost, the kid hits a hole. Marcus Hooker sits back, doesn't fill the initial hole. And then this kid, Covey, just went full on white Reggie Bush. Jalen Johnson needs to spill it to the boundary on the sideline. So in the sideline, they teach what's called spill it, right? You have the sideline as an extra defender. When the ball comes to you, you don't want to stay outside of him. You don't want to contain him and make him cut it upfield because that creates creases, right? You want to come underneath and force him to bounce it to the sideline. Then all pursuit comes and knocks him out of bounds. That's how you cover kickoffs. It's called spill and stack mentality, right? So Jalen Johnson doesn't spill it. He overruns it, contains it, creates a big-ass crease, right? So the kid hits the crease. And then Marcus Hooker's right there in the crease, misses the tackle. Then Lathan Ransom misses a tackle, and the kid is off to the races, 28-14 Utah. The very next defensive series, they get it to 4th-and-1. And Zach Harrison gets bullied in the run game. This kid needs to come back. I don't know if he's thinking about leaving. He needs to come back. He is above average as a pass rusher and below average in the run game. Not ready for the NFL. Gets bullied in the run game. A missed tackle by Taraja Mitchell. Bryson Shaw completely stops and quits on the play. I guess he thought the quarterback was down, I guess. And rising, this unathletic, averagely athletic quarterback has a 62-yard touchdown run because basically Taraja missed a tackle, Zach Harrison got bullied, and Bryson Shaw just stopped. I think he thought he was down. So that was the first half. Second half, they come out. Huge 3-and-out on the first Utah drive. Right after the interception, then the punter bobbles the punt, and then that very series, touchdown pass to Marvin Harrison Jr. That's how huge it is to get a 3-and-out at the beginning of the second half to create momentum, right? The second drive, they come out, they had two huge runs. Ronnie Hickman missed a tackle on the first one. Cade Stover was hesitant in his gap. He just hasn't played on defense long enough, I guess. But he just was hesitant. He looked like he was a little rusty. Then with 3 minutes left, up 7, they let Utah drive down and answer, right? Ohio State's up 7, they let him drive down and answer. Ronnie Hickman was a huge liability in coverage. He was on that touchdown pass, he was awful in man coverage. Horrible body placement and body control. He gets beat on a fade, and I still can't figure out what the fuck he's doing. I mean, he never gets his shoulders and body turned to the receiver. He never runs with the receiver. He stays like square towards the line of scrimmage. Just awful fundamentally. And honestly, that's on coaching to me. That's not on Ronnie. The fact that that could happen means he's not being well coached fundamentally. But here it is what it is. That was the defensive game. Obviously, Ohio State went down and answered, kicked the game-winning field goal. And honestly, when it comes to this game, I'm here for it. All of it. Exhibition game that does matter. That's what it is. You got to see a ton of young guys and the future that is the 2022 Buckeyes. It was a great win for Ryan Day and gives them incredible momentum into the offseason. Defensively, I mean, I was going to do analytics about this game, and the only thing I will throw out there because people are going to ask about it, but we're going to have a new defense next year, so let's not beat a dead horse. But 22 missed tackles in this game. 22. Unbelievable. Tommy Eichenberg led the team in missed tackles with 4 missed tackles. 4. On top of that, in pass coverage, he was targeted 7 times for 7 receptions. So just because he had a great game, quote unquote, doesn't mean he played well. He gave up 7 completions and tackled the guy, had a bunch of tackles down the field. It just wasn't a great game for the Buckeyes on defense. But great win. Let's go off in a high note. Huge offseason. I have a quick word from one of our sponsors, and then I want to kind of recap the season and talk about each position group, where they were at, kind of celebrate their achievements, and move on to talk about the 2020 version of Ryan Day's Ohio State Buckeyes. Real quick, right back after a word from one of our sponsors. So I want to take this moment to tell you about a podcast that I started listening to because they advertise on the show, and I think it's really an interesting dynamic. It's an interesting podcast. The intersection of sports, culture, and politics is at the heart of the new weekly podcast, The Long Game with LZ and Leach, because sticking to just sports in 2021 is simply not possible or realistic, right? Sports extends beyond what happens on the field, court, or pitch. It's in everything, which is why LZ and Granderson and Will Leach cover the expanding world of sports and how the events on the field affect the events off the field and vice versa. New episodes are out every Wednesday, so you can head to therecount.com or your preferred podcast platform to listen to all available episodes. Just check it out, The Recount. I'm telling you, it's different than my show. It's different than ESPN. It's different than anything you'll hear in sports media. It's an interesting dynamic and an intersection of sports and the real world. And I just encourage you to check it out. Give it a listen. See what you think. I highly recommend checking it out. And so go check it out. That's what I'm saying. All right, let's talk about the 2021 Buckeyes, because there were some unbelievable achievements. And first, I saw my guy Kevin Wilson, who blocked me on Twitter. I already shot him a text. He hasn't texted me back. I just did it today, though. Blocked me on Twitter, I guess because I've been critical of the offense or the stretch run game. It could be the only reason. I mean, Kevin is my guy. So I saw him in a press conference. He got kind of salty. Like, everyone wants to criticize the O-line, criticize him. It's the number one offense in America. And don't get me wrong. I think it was the best offense in college football. But he's just hilarious. I love K-Dub. I love him. But it was. How about this? I'm going to just throw a bunch of analytics at you. This is the offense in general. They were the number one offense in Power 5 football in plays over 10 yards, 268 on the year. That's insane. Plays over 20 yards, 93. Plays over 30 yards, 42. Plays over 40 yards, 25. And plays over 50 yards. They had 18 plays over 50 yards. Number one in the Power 5 in all those. You want to talk about an explosive offense? Christ, that's insane. And it all starts with the quarterback, the golden arm, CJ Stroud. How about this for you? The third highest graded quarterback in Power 5 behind Bryce Young and Kenny Pickett, graded out 92% as a quarterback, not just a passer, as a quarterback, third highest in the country. He was the third best deep ball quarterback in Power 5. Tua's younger brother and Kenny Pickett were number one and two. 57% adjusted completion percentage on deep balls. He had the second most deep ball touchdowns in Power 5 with 18. Fourth best intermediate quarterback in Power 5, 71%. He had the most intermediate throws for a touchdown in all of Power 5 football. What that means is 15 times he threw a pass 10 to 12, 20 yards, it was a touchdown. More than anyone else in the country. Kudos to Zone 6. Kudos to his accuracy. I mean, you think about it. When a quarterback throws accurately on a 12-yard pass, it allows you to run with the ball. You saw it on Jackson Smith and Jigba's dig for a touchdown against Utah. How about this? Side note, only 8 of his passing touchdowns have come on short throws under 10 yards. 8. 20 of the Heisman Trophy winner Bryce Young's were under 10 yards. 20 touchdowns were on throws under 10 yards for Mr. Bronze Heisman Trophy himself. There's going to be a battle for that trophy next year. I'm just telling you. CJ was the sixth best quarterback in the country on short throws, 85% completion. Unbelievable. And here's a did you know? Did you know? CJ Stroud ranks 31st in the country, only throwing 5 touchdowns when he was under pressure. 10th with a 70% completion percentage. But he had the 12th least sacks in Power 5, 17 on him. And Ohio State's skill had the 8th most drops in the country when facing pressure situations. So he's 10th in the country completing the ball when he's under pressure. And because of that panic mentality, Ohio State, their receivers, tight ends, and running backs had the 8th most drops in the country. A lot of numbers to throw at you. Basically, he was a fucking baller. And there was a handful of times where his receivers didn't help him. He also had the 2nd most touchdowns in the United States of America versus blitz defense, 21. Kenny Pickett had 25. And he only threw 2 interceptions versus blitz. When teams blitzed, he only threw 2 interceptions all year long. That's wild. 7th in the country with 78% completion percentage versus blitz. Slightly down from when teams didn't blitz, which was 80%. And that's a really, really solid stat line. Those of you that listen to the show, you know. I talk about deep balls, throws over 10 yards, and what do you do versus blitz compared to base? I mean, 80% versus base, 78% versus blitz. Basically, same guy. Same guy. He crushed teams that blitzed him. 2/3 of his yards came on pure drop back pass. Not a lot of play action helping this kid throw the ball. So that's just even further, an even bigger testament to what he did this year. He was number one in Power 5 at 10.1 yards per attempt. Number two in Power 5 with 44 passing touchdowns. By the way, with two less games than Bryce Young has had, just so we're clear. So really, he's number one in passing touchdowns per game. He's better than Bryce Young throwing passing touchdowns on a game-by-game average. I don't know if that matters. Number one in Power 5 football in QBR, 186.5, which is astronomically high. Number two in Power 5 football in completion percentage, 72%. I mean, I could go on forever, and I'm going to keep going because this kid deserves celebrated. I've been critical, and don't get me wrong, he has things he needs to improve. He improved one of them in that game against Utah, running that scramble. He showed me what I needed to see. But then how about this? Ohio State was second in all of Power 5 football in 30-plus yard passing plays. They had 28 passing plays over 30 yards. That's crazy. They're number one in Power 5 football with 10 passing plays over 50 yards. They had 10 passing plays over 50 yards. They led the country. Unbelievable. He improved as the season went on with timing, with getting the ball out of his hands. I mean, 2.7 seconds snap to throw is, I mean, it's acceptable. It's good. It's not elite. It's nothing crazy like Joe Burrow or some of these other quarterbacks have been, but it was really good, and he improved as the year went on. But did you know Kenny Pickett, you talk about first-round draft pick, number one overall pick, he was the slowest in Power 5 getting the ball out of his hands. 3.2 seconds. Try that against a good pass rusher. Try that in the NFL, Kenny. See how that works out for you. Your head will be ripped off of your body. It would be in the SEC or against some of these top-tier teams. But when C.J. Stroud got the ball out in under 2.5 seconds, how about this? When he got the ball out, this is all the development of a quarterback, right? He did it more frequently later in the season than he did at the beginning, as you would expect. When he got the ball out in under 2.5 seconds, he threw 25 touchdowns and zero interceptions. None. Not one. When he was on time and delivered it. Unbelievable stat. Over 2.5 seconds, 19 touchdowns and 6 interceptions. All 6 of his interceptions were over 2.5 seconds. Now, don't get me wrong. You have to hold onto the ball a little longer for certain concepts and route structures. You do. To take shots down the field, hard play actions, that you're going to have to hold on longer than 2.5 seconds. Can you imagine what a receiver can run in 2.5 seconds? But you need to have the ball out in three. Averaging 3.2 for Kenny Pickett is absurd. I don't know, like, is it lots of scramble drills? I don't know. But I thought that was phenomenal. The one thing that I think he could improve in is pressures responsible for, right? How many pressures was he directly responsible for? Meaning he didn't work the pocket well. And that's the two criticisms I've given C.J. Stroud are, I guess, his demeanor, if you want to count that. But when it comes to football, not scrambling and running the ball, right? Number one. And number two is working the pocket. He got sacked a handful of times against Michigan because he didn't work the pocket right. He was responsible for 96 quarterback pressures this year, 47th in the country. So not terrible, not great. Bryce Young, however, was the second worst in Power 5 football, 153 quarterback pressures responsible for. But unbelievable year. Honestly, a hell of a setup to a Heisman Trophy campaign next year and possibly a national championship, depending on the defense. Certainly a playoff bid. But the guys he was throwing to, woo-wee, that's the best receiver core you've seen in a long time in college football now. How about this? Did you know? The number one graded receiver in the United States of America at the end of the 2021 season was Jaxon Smith-Njigba, 92%. Number 18, Garrett Wilson, 84%. Number 34, Chris Olave, 80%. The only school in college football with three wide receivers grading out 80% or better. I mean, just, you got to get a round of applause for Brian Hartline. Unbelievable job developing that group, coaching those kids. Just dominant. Dominant. How about Jordan Addison, the Biletnikoff Award winner from Pitt, the God, as they call him, the best in the country, right? That's what they told me. Had 17 touchdowns. Their top three receivers had 26 total. He had 65% of all the touchdowns. Chris Olave was sixth on the list, 13 touchdowns, which was 38%. Of Ohio State's touchdowns. Garrett Wilson, 7th, 12 touchdowns. Jaxon Smith-Njigba, 21st, with 9 touchdowns. So Ohio State kind of had a problem. They had to spread it out amongst three great players and have, a 1,500-yard back. But we get it. Pitt throws the ball to Jordan Addison every time, and that means he's the best receiver in the country. That's clear why we champion Jordan Addison as the GOAT. because zone six is loaded and Pitt just threw him the ball every play. Three receivers in the top 25 of touchdowns scored. No one in America had two, right? Ohio State had three receivers in the top 21 of touchdowns scored, and no one else in America had two. Did you hear that? Jaxon Smith-Njigba was the most efficient deep ball receiver in Power 5. Chris Olave had the fifth most deep ball touchdowns in Power 5. Jaxon Smith-Njigba was the number one intermediate receiver in college football with a 99% grade in that yardage. All in all, he was the number one slot receiver in college football, 94% grade in the slot. The group was special. Special. And then a glimpse into 2022, Marvin Harrison Jr., Jaxon Smith-Njigba, and Emeka Egbuka are the best three. I believe those will be the three. Julian Fleming is a solid fourth, in my opinion. Needs to get healthy, needs to develop. But, I mean, the number one receiver, so that's the future, but also of note, the number one reception percentage versus man coverage in the country, the United States of America, Garrett Wilson, 86% of the time they played man coverage, and it was thrown to him, he caught the ball. Nuts. The third highest overall graded receiver versus man coverage in Power 5, Jaxon Smith-Njigba. Garrett Wilson and Chris Olave are tied for second in the country in touchdowns versus man coverage. They both had five each versus man coverage. Boy, that's a lot of analytics I threw at you, highlighting the accomplishments of this group. Unbelievable year for Brian Hartline's group, Zone 6. Just great. You go back to Tony Alford's group, Tote Nation, man. Third in the country, not first like Kevin Wilson said, third in the country, averaging 5.5 yards per carry, mainly because the OSU Ryan Day, CJ Stroud identity, right? Ohio State ran the ball less than 111 teams in all of college football. So 111 teams ran the ball more than Ohio State, 32.5 times a game, 112th. So for perspective, in 2020, they ran the ball the 23rd most. In 2019, Ohio State ran the ball the 7th most in the country. So a little different dynamic in Buckeye Nation with this offense. But we could talk about rushing averages all day, but extremely long runs skew the average. Think about it. If a kid pops like two 90-yard runs, his average is going to be astronomically high. That doesn't tell you how dynamic and effective it was play to play, right? Ohio State's rushing attack was 41st in the country in runs over 10 yards, but 6th in the country at runs over 50 yards. So that skews the stats a little bit, K-Dub. But how about this? Did you know? This is another did you know fact. Mayan Williams was 4th in Power 5 football, averaging 7.1 yards per carry. And Travion Henderson was 7th at 6.8. So you talk about a 1-2 punch? Whoo! They're the only school in Power 5 with two in the top 7. Travion was 15th in Power 5 with 96.5 yards per game. And one of only two players in the country in the top 15 with under 200 carries to get there. So dynamic. Mayan Williams, though, meatball. Talk about a power runner. A guy that's athletic with a burst with power. Woo! Number two in Power 5 football. 4.7 yards after contact per attempt. When someone hit Mayan Williams, on average, he got 5 yards after that. That's nuts. Nuts. Number seven on that list is Travion Henderson. So after contact also includes making a guy miss, obviously. Travion was top 15 in missed tackles forced with 50, despite the only player in the top 15 with under 200 attempts. So the future is bright for Tony Alford's group. Switch over to the offensive line. Honestly, really disappointing year. That's the only way to put it, right? They should have been the best in the country. They were not. Overall blocking grades, DeJuan Jones, 66th, Matt Jones, 118th, Luke Weipler, 133rd, Thayer Mumford, unranked, Paris Johnson, unranked, Nick Petitfriere, unranked. Has nothing to do with talent, just honestly performance. It was all coaching and performance. I don't necessarily agree with those grades from Pro Football Focus, but it was interesting to see. You go to pass blocking grades, DeJuan Jones, the highest graded pass blocker, 79%. Luke Weipler, the second highest at 72%. Thayer Mumford, 66%. Paris Johnson Jr., 65%. And Nick Petitfriere at 60%. He gave up 22 quarterback pressures, and he's sitting out the bowl game, going to the NFL. Gotcha. Luke Weipler actually was the fourth. He was fourth in America in pass block efficiency. He only gave up 8 quarterback pressures compared to 22 for Nick Petitfriere. 8 quarterback pressures on 516 pass blocks. Now, I will say this. Before we start championing that as the pecking order of linemen, it is much harder to be a tackle than a center. It just is. You think about it. The center, when an offensive line slides, right? The center is always a part of the slide, so he always has help. He never is on his own. Rarely on his own. And not to get too deep into it, there is ways that you can get a center on his own. But most of the time, he's in a slide side. He's protected. All in all, this group was the 12th best pass-blocking group in the country. Tight end, running back, quarterback, everybody. 12th best. Not bad. Obviously, you want to be first. Not bad. So when you look at the 2022 offensive line, it'll be interesting to see. Obviously, Thayer Mumford declared for the draft. I would imagine. I mean, not imagine. The two tackles are going to be Paris Johnson, DeJuan Jones. Be interesting to see who goes where. I would imagine DeJuan kicks over to left. Paris slides out to right tackle. It'll be an easier flip for DeJuan. Paris is already lined up in a right-handed stance. So I would imagine that's where they go. At center, it's going to be hard to replace Luke Weipler. I know Harry Miller was going to be the guy, but one of those two is going to play, right? One of them is going to move to guard. The other one will be center, and you'll have a nice backup center to slide in. Matt Jones was the sixth lineman this year to slide in at that left guard spot. And then the real question is, I think there's two real candidates to push for a starting job, push some of these kids like Harry Miller and Matt Jones. And that's Donovan Jackson, a true road-grading, mammoth athletic guard. Something that Ohio State didn't have this year. Didn't have a road grading fat guard. Like they had, Paris Johnson looks like an athlete, man. He looks like a freaking oversized tight end that might be 300 pounds. talk about an NFL talent, but probably better suited at tackle. A true road grading guard in Donovan Jackson, the number one ranked guard in the country coming out. They need to find a way to get him on the field. Need to coach him up, need to develop him. He has to play as a sophomore, has to. And then the big Hawaiian is a wild card, Enoch Vamahi. Just keep an eye on him. I've had a lot of history with Samoan players, and man, they are a different animal. All the way back to John Jalapio at Florida. The tight end group, unfortunately, there just wasn't room for an excellent player like Jeremy Ruckert to shine. He will play in the NFL and be a really good player, and I think they should have involved him more. I do. But this is just a product of Kevin Wilson's philosophy, which led the country in damn near everything, so it's hard to argue against it. But it's hard to recruit a tight end moving forward, right? They had Jeremy Ruckert, an NFL tight end, and didn't do shit with him. Now, they're going to have next year G. Scott Jr., a big receiver tight end. But my only question is, who's going to fill that void as a blocker on slide protection? Like, who is going to be that tight end that can block stretch like Ohio State loves to run? Or are they going to have to go to a more insert run game with G. Scott? What about pass pro? Is G. Scott Jr. going to be able to really block a defensive end? I think he's going to be an outstanding, impact player next year, but as more of an athletic movement tight end, they need that on the line guy that has been at Ohio State forever. They have two real candidates, Sam Hart, the redshirt freshman, 6'5", 245 from Colorado, and then the redshirt sophomore, Joe Royer, complete unknown, same body type, 6'5", 245. It's going to be interesting. They brought in a three-star, 6'5", 235-pound tight end in Bennett Christian from Georgia. They really beat Georgia Tech, Kansas, Kentucky, and Michigan State on him. Really a huge get. This is the biggest concern on offense to me. Ruckert was an unsung and pretty much unrewarded hero of this offense. And now they don't have a guy to replace him. There's going to be coaching and development. I know that. One of those two kids is going to have to pop, going to have to become a guy. Or the reality is they need to find a guy in the portal. And I looked through it. I didn't see any tight ends that were worthy. So that's the offense in a nutshell. I think 2022 is looking really good. If they can shore up that tight end position, watch out. I don't know if Cade Stover moves back over because I think he has a shot to be really good. And you talk about need. They need linebackers, but they really need a tight end for next year. Switching over to the defense, the 41st graded tackling defense in Power 5. God, you hate to see it. 158 missed tackles on the year. Horrendous. 12 per game. Man, is that bad. The linebackers playing keys, filling the right gap, filling it aggressively, the lack of a pass rush. They didn't have a third cover guy, that slot corner. They didn't have a post safety after Josh Proctor got hurt. Just so many issues on issues. But looking forward at the positivity, the Broyles Award-winning Defensive Coordinator of the Year, Jim Knowles, is coming to town, right? Riding on a big white horse or one of those big, beautiful black beauties. Coming to town to fix the defense. The highest two graded defenders on the Silver Bullets, if you want to call them that still, Zach Harrison was the only player on defense on the year to grade over 80%, 82% grade. Tylenol Williams graded out 75%. At D end, assuming Zach Harrison comes back, but even if he doesn't, they're set. Larry Johnson is set. The Rushmen are set. Zach Harrison, JTT, Jack Sawyer, Javonte Bean-Baptiste, Javonte Jean-Baptiste. They're loaded. And then at D-tackle, Tylenol Williams should be an All-American. Teron Vincent came on strong. I think he'll be dominant in his last hurrah next year, assuming he returns. They need Ty Hamilton to make an offseason jump and another young guy to come along. They'll have a nice four-man rotation at both spots. They'll be deep, loaded, strength of the defense. You look at the linebacker core, I'm going to go through it quick because I beat this up every episode. The lowest graded starters on defense were two linebackers. Taraja Mitchell, 44%. Cody Simon, 55%. Your inside linebackers. Al Washington's Bash Brothers, the two lowest graded starters. Then you add in Tommy Eichenberg at 63%. Steel Chambers at 65%. Man, this group. I feel like we are in a four-year running Groundhog Day. If you ever seen a movie. It's like nonstop every year. Linebackers, linebackers, linebackers. We got to get some coaching and development. Because next year, you're going to have Cody Simon and Steel Chambers anchor in the middle. Tommy Eichenberg, hopefully he comes along and they Mickey Marotti can really increase his athleticism and speed. Then I don't know who you have. I honestly don't. Reed Carrico, I think, is kind of in above his head a little bit at Ohio State. Cade Stover, does he stay on defense? I mean, I like the kid. I like the talent. Or does DeMonte Tranum, I don't even know how to say his name, kid, the Akron kid from that went to Arizona State, played running back there, was a 400-yard rusher for Arizona State. He's transferring home to play linebacker for the Buckeyes. Is he an impact guy? Or can we get a Raekwon McMillan out of this recruiting class? C.J. Hicks and Gabe Powers. I mean, nationally recognized dominant linebackers in high school, two Ohio kids. Will they be able to make an impact as a freshman? I mean, there is, you talk about opportunity. Whew, you can't find a time in Ohio State football history with this opportunity for a linebacker to come in and play early. Reality is, they got to get another guy out of the portal. Even if those two are great players and play right away, what if they're not? They're high school kids making a jump. You got to do it. Got to go to the portal. So that's my opinion on the linebackers. Secondary, safety, getting Josh Proctor back will be huge. He's got to get back to his full self. But Josh Proctor was going to be a great player this year. Unfortunately, he broke his leg. Broken legs are way better to come back from than a torn ACL or a really bad ankle. So he should be able to come back. Ronnie Hickman needs a ton of work. One of the biggest liabilities in the secondary this year. He needs a ton of work. Lathan Ransom had a huge sophomore slump and needs to get back to 2020 form and enhance it. He can't just go back to 2020. He needs to get better coached, better developed. Bryson Shaw was out of position and just wasn't very good this year. They got to get Josh Proctor back in that post. And Marcus Hooker, I don't know. Something's missing there. He's got to make a big jump, kind of like his brother did, honestly, like Malik Hooker did, because he didn't even look great on special teams. And then Court Williams is kind of the odd man out when I watch the film. I don't know. Maybe he's 220 pounds. Maybe he can grow into a linebacker. They sure could use it. And then you got freshman Jalen Johnson, Jansen Dunn. Obviously, the jury's still out on them. But the safety position is got a lot of bodies. Lathan Ransom was the one that was kind of a huge disappointment. You'd love to see him bounce back and have a great junior campaign with Josh Proctor, and you feel real good. And then at corner is going to be a huge strength next year. Huge strength, and especially if they can develop some rotational guys. I mean, Cam Brown coming back was a monster get. Him and Denzel Burke will be one of the top cornerback tandems in college football. Now, they need to find a rotational player to kind of give them a break every now and then, and they need to find a slot corner. They don't have a slot corner that I've seen. In my opinion, it isn't legend. Maybe it's Jakalen Johnson, maybe Jordan Hancock. I really like Jordan Hancock's high school film. We'll see if those two can get coached and developed. Then they signed Jair Brown out of Lakota West in Ohio. They signed Ryan Turner down in Hollywood, Florida, down in my neck of the woods, my old recruiting area, Chaminade, great place. And I honestly don't see a signee that has an instant impact player in the secondary in the class of 2022. Kai Stokes is a developmental project guy, maybe a post safety, not going to be an instant impact guy. Jair Brown, I really like him. I think he needs a year to develop. And then Ryan Turner, completely a developmental and project kid. So I like him. I like the class. I just don't think there's anybody that comes in and is an impact guy right away. Because the reality is this. You have to recruit with the big boys to play big boy college football and have All-Americans and first-round draft picks, right? Georgia signed 2 5-star corners this year and one of the highest 4-stars from American Heritage High School where Pat Surtain and Tyson Campbell went. They signed 3 corners better than anyone Ohio State signed. That can't happen. The reality is Ohio State's just not recruiting at the Urban Meyer era level on defense. Plain and simple. Not even close. They're not. Larry Johnson's doing an outstanding job. They obviously got 2 great Ohio linebackers. But outside of that, the secondary recruits, it's just been down. And the national recruiting on defense has been down. And it's something that you can look to in the end if this defense does not improve, was the talent being brought in. So overall, I'm excited. I'm excited for spring ball. I'm really excited to see the offseason development, not only of the defensive staff, maybe even one offensive staff switch ups, but I'm excited to see the offseason development. I'm excited to watch spring ball, the linebacker development, the development of a safety and a fourth DB, right? And then the tight end position, the biggest question marks. Then they got to stay healthy and everyone needs to improve. If they do, you'll be talking about a college football playoff berth. You'll be talking about C.J. Stroud in New York City, possibly hoisting a bronze trophy. You're talking about big shit coming for Buckeye Nation if they can just get to work. And I promise you this much, with that loss to the team up north, with the way the defense played, this offseason, I've seen Johnny Dixon and a bunch of players tweet about it, it's about to be a bitch. You talk about a hard offseason, Mickey Marotti is going to go right back to his roots and instill toughness. And you might have some guys jump in the portal because it's a hard program, but that's okay because the end result will be a better version of this football team than if they don't do it. Mickey's got to deliver on his commitment and his resume, his persona, who he is, and bring this team back to a tough-ass, salty defense that triggers and hits the fuck out of people. That's what it has to be. The reemergence of the Silver Bullets. That's what 2020 is named. But that's what I got for you. Kind of recap the season. On Thursday, we're going to recap the college football playoff semifinals, preview the finals, talk about the last game. If you want to try to win some money or if nothing else, help support the charitable things we are doing. Venmo $100 to Cameron Media right now. Get you a square and come help us raise money and get a chance to win $3,000, man. Shoot, you can hit multiple scores. Maybe you'll win all five. $5,000, one game. Wouldn't that be something? So thank you for tuning in. Thank you for listening. As always, I appreciate you. Hope you enjoyed it. Hope you're entertained. Hope you got something out of this. Big offseason coming. If you have any show ideas, topics, guests you want to see, tweet at us at Menace to Sports. If not, and if you didn't enjoy the show, you don't like this, you don't like the platform, as we say, go fuck yourself, San Diego.
What a hit, Denzel Ward. You got barbecue back there, and you didn't invite me. Hurt my feelings.
You'll be pleased to know this is the last time I'm hosting. I don't care anymore. I'm joking. I never did.
Braxton Miller's loose spin move. Miller heading for the end zone.
You're in no position to lecture the public about anything. You know nothing about the real world.
He'll run it after the 10, 15, 20. 25, 30, 35, 40, 45, 50, 45. There goes Davis.
Oh, my God.
Davis is going to run it all the way back. Auburn's going to win the football game.
Lucky for me, the press can barely speak English.
But they are who we thought they were.
Well, he has trouble with the snap. And the ball is free. It's picked up by Michigan State's Jalen Watts Jackson. And he scores on the last play of the game. Unbelievable.
Well, then get the fuck out of here then. Okay, see ya.